You know, we talk a lot about, like I've said a little bit, just control what you can control. And that's not in my control, but what is in my control was when he was here, competing with him, man, being friendly with him. I mean, he made me better, like, no doubt. He was a guy, just being around him, who's extremely process-driven. He is as good as they come, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with him and his career. I think he's got a good shot. And, man, I'm just super thankful to him. He made me a lot better. But now it's time to just focus what we can control, and that's, like, we've talked about our process, like, match good foot to ball, pick your targets, and hit it, and have fun.
That was Tyler Loop following
Big Looper.
Yesterday's open practice at M&T Bank Stadium, and he was talking about John Hoyland, really praising John Hoyland, and Ravens made a couple of roster moves, including bringing Brent Urban back over the weekend, so they had to make corresponding moves, one of those being John Hoyland no longer here, so that means Big Looper is the only kicker on this roster, and he was 11 for 11 yesterday in front of the fans. John Harbaugh, after practice, he said, A++++. He was effusive
yes.
in his praise of Big Looper. And Jason, so far during training camp, assuming no kicks have happened yet today.
Correct.
Big Looper is 51 for 55. Three of those four misses was
all
when
in
I
day.
Was
yeah.
when Your I fault. Was watching Big Looper. But how surprised are you, if at all, that this kicking competition, that there is none anymore?
Well, it is interesting on many levels, and let's be real. The fact that he's replacing a legend who left in ignominious circumstances, he is in a position of great prominence in that when these guys are doing their thing, there's nobody else on the field. Even if it's warm-ups before a preseason game and you're sitting there in the stands drinking a cold one, it's going to be pretty easy to see if it's going in or not. So he's under a microscope. The organization hasn't had to deal with bleeding in a novice kicker for a decade and a half. And we wondered openly, with two unknowns, it's not like the other kicker was somebody who had thrived at some point in his career at the NFL level, so you didn't need to see him in the preseason. We wondered if there'd be enough volume in these preseason games for both rookie kickers to get enough to even warrant a competition. And obviously, that was going to be difficult. And I think that and a little bit of a roster crunch and Looper's early performance, because it is very early, all led them to this conclusion. So on the surface, it's a little surprising because you thought this would have played out longer. I do think, too, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of cute and refreshing to hear Big Looper, you know what I mean, talking about all this and, you know, how Hoyland pushed it. I mean, dude, it didn't even...
Yeah,
we barely made it to August. Like,
weeks.
I mean, it was basically, what, August the 1st or August the 2nd when this went down? But it just speaks to where he is in his career versus, you know, what was at the kicker position previously. I think it's a good thing. I also think it doesn't really change anything for me because it was going to be difficult to get both these kids' kicks in the preseason games. And if it doesn't go well in the preseason, there are a myriad of other options out there on the street who you could bring into your camp on a moment's notice.
Here's where I am. This was a competition, air quotes, but it was always going to be an extremely uphill battle for Hoyland to win this competition. Because generally speaking, and even though Looper's just a sixth round pick, when you draft a kicker, they're at least going to get a crack at it. It's not often at all that you draft a kicker and they're not kicking for you come week one. So that part doesn't surprise me. But the fact that we're making it, we didn't even make it to a preseason game and Hoyland's not here, that's the surprising part. Now, would I have been surprised after maybe two preseason games, Hoyland's gone, when maybe they're trying to whittle down the roster a little bit? Sure. And it was probably always going to get to this point. But having that illusion of Hoyland. I thought that that was going to persist at least through the majority of training camp.
You're not just managing a cog here. You're managing a person who has a unique psyche, and they're being asked to do something they've never done before, which is kick footballs professionally. So I think some of this, too, is reading him and knowing maybe what's going to be best for him. And, you know, do you want this to seem like it wasn't enough of a competition and maybe, like, it goes to his head a little bit? You know what I mean? Like, I think part of this is managing very much Looper psyche, his confidence, what's going to bring out the best in him? What's he going to respond best to? You don't want him to think he's just been handed anything. But again, they've already had to give him some days off because it's not like they've got three of these guys in camp. We're reaching a point where off days are going to start to be built into the week more because there's no practice the day and after, before and after a game. And you could only really probably jerry-rig these opportunities so much in a game. So the fact that he has been demonstratively better than Hoyland, not to say that Hoyland's been bad. This kid's been better. And then he backed it up this weekend and hit one from what?
60. 56 and 60. And they have the TrackMan data now, Jason. The 60-yarder would have been good from 67 if you're into things like that.
So this seems like them having a good read on the situation, having a good read on what makes Big Looper tick, and sort of that it's always that carrot and a stick, right? You want to dangle the carrot, but sometimes a little bit of tough love, or, you know, again, making him feel like somebody's pushing him. They've obviously reached a point where now it's all about Big Looper. This is your job. You keep it. Like, now you're going to have to keep it. And he still hasn't kicked in an exhibition game, and he obviously hasn't kicked in a regular season game. But the reality of this position is, again, you could put a Tuesday afternoon kicking competition together with four, especially once guys start getting cut in another week from now, with four guys who have had at least a modicum of success kicking professionally before. That's not difficult to construct.
No Ken Wyman all week long. He is going on, I guess, his first family trip now that he's been married with the kids.
I can't keep track.
He's in Universal.
Bone, I just show up to work every day, man. I don't know what everybody else, multiple vacations and this or that. You know, Wyman Industries planes and helicopter rides. I just show up to work. I'm a grinder. I don't know about that stuff.
He's in Universal, though. So it's going to be Jason and I and Beltway Ben.
It sounds
Hall
like a living hell to me.
All so week. What?
Being in line at Universal in August heat down in Florida? No thanks. I'd rather be here talking about Baltimore sports.
Are you not a amusement park guy, though?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, I am.
What part of anything about me would you think, yeah,
that's true,
that's his jam?
That's true. Being around that many people, crowded.
I don't like lines. Heights. I don't like drops. I don't like
fun.
Not being in control of the situation.
All right, well, Kyle Goon.
Lines.
Kyle Goon is going to be joining us at 3:30, columnist for the Baltimore Banner. Put out a great piece.
Yes, he did.
Following the trade deadline, questioning Mike Elias and what has he done to earn the good faith of Orioles fans. He's at 3:30. Jim Bowden joins us at 4. Last time he was on this show, a couple months ago, we keep playing that clip. Mike Elias is on the clock.
Yes.
What did Jim think of how Mike Elias operated during the trade deadline? Jonah Schaefer, he's out at one winning drive. He'll join us at 4:30. We'll talk Ravens and O's with Cordell Woodland at 5.
Yeah, a lot to get here, too. I do find it interesting, Bone. There are a lot of people in the Orioles organization and their parrots and puppets in the media who want to talk about 22 and 2023 like, those are the only games that matter that this team has played during the rebuild, right? They want to go back to this period of time where they had, for parts of two seasons, the best record in the American League. And then these same people, in real time, where we are right now, going into 7 years with these people on the job, and the JV bocce ball coach and people in the media want to tell you that these games they're playing don't really matter, and they're just glorified exhibitions, and everybody should get an extra orange wedge and have an extra sprinkle on their cupcake because they almost won two games from the Cubs. I mean, We still don't have a guy in right field who can catch the ball. Like, we went through having to watch DJ Stewart and Dwight Smith pretend to be outfielders. I told you they never taught Heston Kerstad how to catch a ball, track a ball, field a ball. We had to watch that. We got to watch broken down Paul Bunyan, can't move laterally or in or out, doesn't know how to throw the ball, O'Neal. And then they had a chance to play Jeremiah Jackson in the right field as much as they wanted in the minors, right? They had to know pretty early on this season's going to tank. I was in Norfolk back in early in June and July and told my kids, that guy's going to be in the majors because I see what's coming. And they never play him in the outfield till he gets here. Like, I mean, I'm just so over all the BS. And then they got to tell you it doesn't really matter anyway. It's a major league team that went out of its way to lose as many games as possible, got good for a hot minute, have sucked for 14 months, and they're telling you the 14 months that you've watched consecutively since last June, that doesn't really matter. What we are is what we were for a hot minute in 22 and 23. How does that make sense?
It doesn't.
Do you ever feel like you're being gaslit? Because I do.
We'll get more into the Orioles at 2:30. All the young dudes, a lot of what Jason was talking about, will look at the outfield. Colton Cowser, he
can't play the outfield either.
We were thinking with Cedric Mullins traded, maybe he'd be the everyday center fielder. He didn't play in center field at all over the weekend.
Doesn't know what base to throw
and
to.
What the Still. Heck are they going to do in right field? That is at the bottom of the hour. But coming up next, we're going to continue training camp talk with the Ravens. We're going to hear some of the best sound from over the weekend. Nate Wiggins, Jair Alexander, and John Harbaugh as well. It's Inside Access on 105.7 The Fan.
Well, you know, we start with building chemistry with one another. I think that's important. The closer we are, the more we'll be able to feed off each other and play as a unit. So, I mean, that's the first thing that I wanted to establish.
That's new addition Jair Alexander over the weekend, and he picked off Lamar Jackson not once, but twice in a practice over the weekend, Jason. And Jair was talking about building that chemistry in this secondary. It's a very strong secondary. It's a very young secondary, and a couple of new pieces, really three new pieces, in Jair Alexander, Chidobe Awuzie, and of course Malachi Starks, who they took in the first round. And then you add in Chuck Pagano as well, which we'll get to in a second.
Yeah, I mean, he's highly motivated. This is someone who's not that far removed from signing a contract that was pretty significant in real time. He was a part of teams in Green Bay that routinely made it to the playoffs and competed to never made it to a Super Bowl, but we're in that NFC side of the equation discussion pretty annually. He's being looked at around the league as addition by subtraction in Green Bay, because while I don't think he's a bad guy at all, he had worn out his welcome. Like, the whole angling of pay me more money or get me out of here, like it had been festering for a while there. That's not to say he won't be much better here, especially knowing I got 1 year to prove it and then get my money, whether it's here or elsewhere. So I think the timing can absolutely be right for the Baltimore Ravens if he can stay healthy.
Well, here's Nate Wiggins, who's been a standout throughout training camp thus far. You're hoping that he's one of those players that takes a big leap from year one to year two, and he was a very good player even as a rookie. He talked about the impact that Chuck Pagano has had on the DBs.
He's bringing whatever you need, for real. If you got an off day, he's going to pick you up. I mean, he bring the energy. I mean, he know a lot of ball. I mean, you can tell he coached for a long time, so he know a lot of ball. I mean, he coached Ed Reed, so, I mean, coach Hall of Famer, so, I mean, why would you not want to do it like that? Who know everything, you know what I mean? So,
it is a really good point that Wiggins, man, like, think of all the talented ball players.
Should be an immediate buy-in.
That Chuck Pagano has been around, and of course he brought up Ed Reed, Pagano, part of John Harbaugh's first coaching staff in Baltimore from 2008 through 2011. It's a guy that comes into the room with instant credibility. And he also seems like a guy, Jason, with outgoing personality. And John Harbaugh was saying yesterday, Chuck always brings the juice. Like, he can relate to the players. And it just seems like a guy that you want to work for. You want to get better for.
Look, everybody's doing cartwheels for Vic Fangio these days, and understandably so. He shut down Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. with the best defensive line in football, but he did it. But I bring him up because he's a guy who's never going to be a head coach again, like Pagano. He's a guy who's comfortable in his own skin and at the end of his career, like Pagano. But Vic Fangio has had difficulty connecting with young players each of his last three or four stops. Like in Denver, it was a problem for him. Like it was a problem for him early with the Eagles until that thing clicked. And I bring that up because Pagano's the opposite. Like, I think Pagano loves coaching the young guys as much as he loves coaching the established guys. And Pagano spent enough time in the college game within, I mean, not any of it is super recently, but like, I think he understands what it's like despite being 40 years older than these kids, what it's like to coach a 20-year-old, a 21-year-old, I mean, 20-year-olds, 22, 23. And I think that's part of the reason why this is so seamless. Like, some of those guys towards the end, you know, Zimmer's another guy I'll bring up. That personality with super young players in a new place, fighting father time. I don't have that many more years doing this. We got to figure this out right now. You're either with me or against me. Like, some of those grizzled old guys, like, it's a tough fit. Pagano is like a 25-year-old in a 65-year-old's body.
The secondary is loaded. Now, the defensive front, that's where we have some questions about. And we mentioned, okay, could there be some additions on the defensive line or at edge? Not saying that this is a big splash by any means, but Brent Urban has played here for a while now. And he signed a one-year contract over the weekend. He's back wearing Michael Pierce's old number, 58. Of course, Pierce has retired. Here's Brent Urban on coming back to Baltimore.
Honestly, didn't have a huge idea at first. Was kind of just figuring out what I wanted to do next. And, you know, once Baltimore reached out, it was kind of a no-brainer for me. You know, the team's so stacked and obviously my history here and just the familiarity with everyone and how comfortable I am. You know, it's a team that's, you know, just loaded, right? And so I want to be a part of that and just thankful to be here, man.
So now you look at this defensive line. You got Brody, Travis Jones, Nnamdi Matabike, Aeneas Peebles, the sixth-round rookie, John Jenkins, who they signed in free agency, and Brent Urban. And look, Urban's not even a lock to make the roster with a practice squad situations where you can keep veterans. But it's a guy that's been here for a while, very respected in the locker room, and plays his role.
I like this. Makes all the sense in the world. Again, I don't think it's the last reunion. We'll see, and we'll see for how long. But this guy is—he's RFL.
Oh yeah,
he's absolutely a legit RFL.
He's had a couple stints here. He's a drafted RFL for a while.
Raven for life.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone that's working to that point, still got a long way to go, is Andrew Voorhees. Where we heard John Harbaugh over the weekend say that Voorhees is in the lead. Ben Cleveland got off to a rough start to training camp. He's been picking it up, but John Harbaugh said that Voorhees has been very consistent thus far during training camp. And Voorhees won the gig last year. Started week one, ended up getting hurt, lost the job because McCary kicked back inside. And Voorhees was asked about the biggest difference between last year to now.
I think overall just if I could pinpoint one thing, it's just confidence. And, you know, taking a year off out of my control, right, with the injury that I was dealing with, it kind of, I feel like it just set me back a little bit in terms of confidence and getting to go through a little bit of what I did last year, get my feet wet a little bit, and just kind of go through the experience of an NFL season. I just feel like confidence kind of grew, and I felt like I put that on display when I had the opportunity to get back in on the last regular season game against Cleveland last year. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's important to point out last year was effectively his rookie season because he didn't play a snap year one, blew out his knee during the combine. Ravens took a flyer on him in the seventh round, but the kicking competition, no more with no John Hoyland, and this guard competition never really seemed like that big of a competition either. It seemed like Voorhees' gig.
I mean, things have to get really sideways, I think, for Ben Cleveland to be starting week one, and that's either through injury or, like, I mean, how many competitive reps is Voorhees really even going to take to the point where he could lose the job over the course of the two preseason games he plays in? Like, and even then, with those evaluations, Ronnie Stanley's not playing at all. I don't think Linderbaum's playing
in a contract year
at all. Heck no. Right? So it's going to be a hodgepodge group. I don't think this is really much of a competition.
We're going to get back into the Ravens at the top of the hour. Chuck Pagano met with the media for the first time this training camp. We'll play some of his best sound, get back into the secondary at that point. 2:45, we're going to hit the hot corner. Trevor Rogers has been spectacular for the Orioles this year. Is Brandon Young start to turn the corner? And could Slimpovich join those young guys and stand out there? But coming up next, it's all the young dudes. Jeremiah Jackson dropped a pretty routine fly ball in right field yesterday. Colton Cowser didn't play any center field over the weekend. It was Dylan Carlson. We're going to dive into this outfield on the other side. It's Inside Access on The Fan.
Bush rides it out to right field, fighting the sun. Carlson called up by Jeremiah Jackson, who lost it. Lands right at his feet. Bush ends up at second after that routine fly ball was dropped in right field.
Ben Wagner on the call, courtesy of Masson, and that was one of the lazier fly balls that you will see get dropped.
Unbelievable, yet totally believable.
In MLB, Jeremiah Jackson, that error happened, and then it led to two unearned runs against Brandon Young, where the Cubs, they took an early 2-0 lead yesterday, ended up going on to win in walk-off fashion 5-3.
It would shame them if they were capable of shame. It just doesn't make sense why you have Dylan Beavers, who's a plus-plus outfielder, who you refused to call up. You had all season to experiment and not fuck with Jeremiah Jackson. You don't play him in the outfield at all, despite being in a scenario where you don't want to play Basayo in right field, even though I've been telling you for years you should try it. You should have had Heston Kjerstad playing first base, because that outfield experiment is a complete joke. And these college outfielders that you drafted, Enrique Bradfield Jr. and Honeycutt, they ain't even close to AAA. So despite all of that happening, they never ran Jackson in the outfield to see if he could do it. And now we get to all find out together at the major league level. We get to find out if he's a 4A player. He probably is. We get to find out if he has any business being in the major leagues. Oh, and hey, kid, while you're at it, go play a position you never played in your life. Like, how are we still here? How is this still my reality watching this team on a daily basis when they had ways they could have prevented this ahead of time, better options internally with some of their actual prospects like Beavers, but we're more worried about protecting Beavers as a potential top 100 prospect. We're more worried about protecting his trade value while he mashes a league that he's proven he's too good for. But the fans and don't deserve a chance to see Dylan Beavers. And Dylan Beavers has got to watch a former Angels prospect who couldn't get really do anything at AAA with them get his shot before Dylan Beavers. A homegrown kid. Make any of this make sense. The floor is yours.
The Beavers thing makes zero sense at all. And it's really infuriating because this team is trying to thread a needle. And quite frankly, I didn't realize this part of the PPI pick that you get. If the player has to be in a top 100 list of two of the three, where it's MLB Pipeline, Baseball America, and one other list. They have to be in two of the three. And right now, Beavers is in none.
Yeah.
So you're trying to thread this needle in terms of bringing him up at the point August 15th, August 16th. You can't be on the roster for 45 days, and you can't have more than 130 at-bats. That's what they're doing with Sam Basayo, because Sam Basayo is a top-tier prospect in any
everywhere
list that you can find, mainstream or not. But Beavers needs to be here now.
Take all that out of it. What are the odds that they would have two players in the top three? Of the rookie of the year.
I'm with you. It doesn't make any sense. Like you can sell me on the Basayo part of it. Okay, he's 20 years old, even though he's mashing that league. You want him to play more catcher. Like, you can sell me on some of that, even though he should probably be here now. Beavers, there's no excuse. Like, what is he, 23, 24 years old?
He's in Kowser's draft class.
Yes.
Like, they were both college outfielders. One can actually know what base to throw to.
And you're talking about a guy, and Mancelino's always brought it up when you're talking about Basayo. Like, he's beat the door down. Dylan Beavers deserves to be here.
He's batting leadoff with a 950 OPS, on base over 400. Like, last time I looked, it was like 18 steals on 19 attempts. What are we doing here? And he's a plus defender.
And look, he could come up here and he's going to take his lumps. But wouldn't you want that now in the final 2 months?
And here's the trickle down of it. Because they waited too long to embrace the garbage team and garbage franchise that they are. So who gets hurt most by all this? Brandon Young, who we haven't found out enough about because they're still, you know, they were playing their games with the Saganos and, oh, let's sign Kyle Gibson and all this baloney. So he's the one who's got to deal with this ridiculousness when the right fielder can't catch a ball that my 13-year-old son could catch. Like, how is this, what did he call it? The elite talent pipeline. How is this liftoff? Liftoff. It's the DeLorean going back in time. We're back to 2019. We're back to 2021. How's this possible?
Oh, that's exactly where we're at. And with all due respect, and it was cool that it happened with Ryan Noda. Yet, like, who the heck knows?
We're back to claiming guys off waivers and playing them ahead of our own prospects.
But
in a lost season.
But before we step out, though, Colton Kowser. We've been talking about this lead up here and how, okay, Sed's going to be gone. Laureano is going to be gone. That frees up the opportunity for him to be an everyday center fielder, so we thought. Matt Weirich covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun. He tweeted this out over the weekend. Colton Kowser is going to mostly play left field over center field for now as Tony Mancelino tries to limit his defensive workload and, quote, reverse engineer an uptick in offense. Also went on to say Coby Mayo will also not be playing any third base despite Ramon Urias being traded, staying at first base. We know that Colton Kowser is in a serious, serious funk right now. When he got activated off the IL, he had a strong June. It was an 860 OPS in the month of June. Hit six home runs, six doubles. Since the calendar has turned to July, 27 games, he's got a 588 OPS.
I mean, I don't take this man. He's not a major league manager. He has no business being in this job. And it disgusts me that we have to listen to him message this stuff on a daily basis. They probably know internally he's not a center fielder.
Well, I think that's what they're saying. Like why would he not be playing center field?
Just remember, this was the fifth overall pick who was supposed to be a premium defender and an embodiment of what their hitting incubator is going to be, a plus hit tool. He's going to get on base. He's athletic. He can steal some bases. And he's going to be a premium defender. He can't hit a cutoff man, and he doesn't know what base to still throw to. Like him throwing home the other day. Like, I don't understand what they do in player development in the outfield in particular, but it's a complete and utter embarrassment. And I don't know if you thought there's even a chance he could play center field. Like, I would be looking at it during these games. They're telling you the games don't matter. So if you don't think he can catch a ball in center field and get on base once a night, when the games don't matter and all the pressure's off, he's probably not an everyday player when or if you ever have a contending team again.
Well, Jason, it's not only that. It's also you could. OK, if it was a highly ranked prospect or someone else playing center, like with all due respect with Dylan Carlson, like he's playing center field over Colton Kowser.
I think Dylan Carlson's a better major league player than Colton Kowser. I mean, I do. Now, and I think it's telling that they're signaling this the way they're signaling it, because I also don't think they're going to spend real money to go and get a center fielder. Mm-hmm. So what I would tell you, as someone who's got the best Oriole BS decoder ring on the planet, get ready for Dylan Carlson in center field opening day next year. That's what I think's going on here. And they're not one off season away from contention. This roster has more holes than it has sure things.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to get back into the Ravens. We're going to hear Chuck Pagano. How fired up is he that training camp is here? We're already a couple weeks in. How fired up is he to have all the talent at his disposal in his secondary? But coming up next, we're going to get into the positive, and that is Trevor Rogers, who has been a really big bright spot for this team. Brandon Young, past couple starts have been pretty interesting. And Kate Povich, he has officially been activated. We will give you the corresponding roster moves on the other side. What are our expectations for Slim? We're going to tell you next on The Fan.
This has just been,
it's been a masterpiece.
Extraordinary, Ben. He hasn't... Forget about a walk. He hasn't gone to a three-ball count.
And what I love, that three times he had himself a little bit of a bind, he found ways to minimize damage.
Off the end of the bat to center, Trevor Rogers does it again. Eight brilliant innings at Wrigley Field. Four hits against the best offense in the league.
Kevin Brown, Ben McDonald on the call courtesy of Masson. His last start happened Friday during our show because it was a 2:20 first pitch. Rogers, eight innings, one earned run, and we're handing you the loss in a decision. That's how much wins and losses matter for starting pitchers. But he's been spectacular, Jason. You look at righties against him, 432 OPS, lefties, 296 OPS off Trevor Rogers. He's only started three games at Camden Yards this year. 209 OPS in those games. He hasn't given up an extra base hit. He's been
masterful.
Masterful in nine starts now.
I'm speechless. Like, he's making this look easy. Like, he's in such command. He's pitching not like he doesn't have to go deep in counts and nobody's getting on base. Like, he's literally like it's tilting. It's almost like he's tilting the mound higher in his favor. Like, he's so in control that he continues to put himself in the best positions, not just to win, but to dominate, because it seems like it's 0-2 like that. Doesn't matter the caliber of hitter. Doesn't matter if he's a lefty or a righty. He's not giving out free passes, which was a massive problem for him. That's one of the reasons his career started to derail in Miami, and one of the reasons he couldn't get out of his own way when they acquired him a year ago. Like, it really does beg a question. If there's any semblance of awareness, competency, and even a shred of being progressive and forthright in that front office, and I don't think there is, but if there is, are you trying to secure this guy's services?
Absolutely. Yeah.
They've extended nobody.
Yeah. It would be hilarious if he ended up being the first guy after last year when it looked like a disaster of a trade, and Kyle Stowers just won National League Player of the Month, by the way. But, yeah, why not? I mean, you could still buy low at this point, because you could say, okay, it's a nine-game sample size.
I mean, he came up in, what, 2021? He's been around the block a few times. He's matured, but he's also one of these guys where it's not like he's throwing 220 innings every year. So it's not like he's got an old arm. Hell, most of the starts he made this year in AAA, which they'll tell you, it's not the same anxiety. It's not the same pressure. You're not maximizing and selling out to get outs the way you do at the major league level. And, they've got no starting healthy pitcher under contract for next year, except for Dean Kramer.
That's it.
Because Bradish is not yet healthy. He's not all the way back. Grayson's clearly not healthy.
Can't count on
Grayson. Eflin doesn't have a contract. Sagano doesn't have a contract. I'm not even sure. Is Suarez a starter? And I mean, whatever. Like, so, yeah, they got a lot of work to do. If you could get some of it done now. Now, look, it would be a risk. He might revert, and you might look like a fool a year from now. But at some point, don't you have to do something?
You would think. Another pitcher yesterday, Brandon Young, gave up zero earned runs, gave up two unearned because of the Jeremiah Jackson error in the first inning. Didn't complete five innings, 4 2/3, 5 hits, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. He's starting to at least show me something, Jason. These past couple of starts, because prior to that point, I wasn't all that high on Brandon Young as a starter. And look, who knows, but I'd like to see more after what we have seen over these past two starts. But he's starting to show you something.
I've been impressed. He, to me, was the kind of kid who was going to need to get off to a good start if he was going to stick in the rotation. And that ended up not being the case. Obviously, there's other reasons that have opened up an opportunity. And he's looked far more comfortable, far more competent to me these last few than the first couple. So good on him. I just, at the major league level, should expect your outfielder to catch a ball with a 100% catch probability. Like that shouldn't be too much of an ask, but that's the state of Orioles baseball. Right back where we were in 2019. That's the Elias way. He killed the Oriole way.
It is official. Cade Povich, he's been reinstated off the IL, left hip inflammation. It's been a little while since we've seen Slim, about a month and a half. Corresponding roster move, Houston Roth, he was optioned to AAA. Jordan Adams has been optioned to AAA. They have activated Vidal Brujan to the roster.
Brujan wants a top 50 prospect himself with the Rays. Had an elite speed and get on base traits, at least through the minors. That has not carried him at the major league level. He's bounced around to a bunch of teams now, been a part of some trades. I don't think he can hit at the major league level whatsoever. And he doesn't really have a natural position. He was never going to stick at shortstop, and he's never looked totally comfortable to me at second base. He's played some outfield in his career. It would have been an interesting guy 4 years ago, Bone.
Quickly on Slim, though, because this is a big two months
for him. It's a tough assignment.
Oh, for sure. But this is a big 2 months for him as well. And we've seen some high highs from Cade this year, and we've seen some low lows. And a lot of times this season, it's that one inning that has really soured his starts and trying to get out of those situations. Two outs, runners in scoring position, 968 OPS. Two outs in general off Slim, 929 OPS. It's getting out of the inning for him.
Yeah, I mean, look, this Phillies team has not hit the way people thought they would, but there's a lot of legitimate bats there. It's a very small ballpark. It's not the best ballpark in the world for lefties. And we know he's been sort of Slim at home, and he's been Cade on the road. So from this much time off, having to face a Phillies team that's in the heat of a pennant race, that has played kind of up and down ball, that need to beat up on a young pitcher like this, and you know, they've got some legitimate right-handed bats. So this is going to be a tough little test for him. But I'm glad he's back. And no matter what happens tonight or whatever, given the course of this season, if I've got to watch Jeremiah Jackson pretend to play right field, you better let this kid pitch every 5 days for the rest of the year and find out all you can about it.
Orioles set to take on the Phillies game one of a 3-game series, 6:45 first pitch. So that means Baltimore baseball tonight at 5:30. Jim Hunter and yours truly. Coming up at 3:15, it's TMI. I went out to the Savannah Bananas game on Friday. You and your family went out on Saturday. We'll give you our recap of the Savannah Bananas at 3:15. But coming up next, it's Chuck Pagano. We're going to hear some of his best sound from over the weekend. Fired up to be back in Baltimore. Fired up to work with a really talented secondary. That's next on The Fan.